Hi everyone, I'm Andy.
And I'm Angela.
And welcome to The Magistream, a podcast for Magestans by Magestans. Note that the podcast The Magistream is not to be confused with the in-game Magistream, a wave of living magic energy that refreshes a Magestan's health and abilities at sunrise.
On this episode, we will be clarifying area-based spells. We'll premiere our trivia segment, Wait, Wait, Don't Spell Me. We'll hear a dramatic reading from our very own Andy. Ryben will answer many of your questions. And even though at the end of the last episode we said we would be discussing alchemy and toxicology, we're actually going to be discussing the incarnations and the Allegiant.
People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. Your only limit is what you can't imagine. Come and listen, la 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 la. Are you still dreaming of your last plot? After game ends, do you feel lost? Are you worried we forgot you? Introducing the Magistream. Come ask Ryben anything. Be your bridge between the games. People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. The only limit is what you can imagine. So come and listen, la 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 la. So come and listen, la 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 la.
Welcome to our podcast. Our first segment today is our Clarify segment, where we clarify either one of Magistry's rules or perhaps an occurrence or plot event that you found confusing or would like to know more about. Today we're clarifying area-based spells. There are several different ways to use magic at Magistry, and one of those ways includes area-based spells, which, as the name might imply, are intended to affect a group of people within a certain area, which is defined by the very first part of the incant.
So most area-based effects can be cast in one of five ways, which I think is super awesome, and it makes the spells like really flexible and allows the same spell to be used in a variety of different ways depending on the scenario. Mm-hmm. The first one is to all within the sound of my voice. And as a clarification, this is a range indicator, not something that's actually audible on an in-game level. So it affects you if you are within the range of being able to hear it out of game. But even if you are deafened in game and you are still within that range, it's still going to affect you.
Yeah. And since it's not part of the incant, like even if you don't have combat casting, you can move your feet while doing it. And even if it's like a silent or psionic spell, like no one hears that part in game.
Right. And that goes for all five of these different ways to cast.
Yeah.
So there's also to all within 30 feet of me, and that is a 30-foot radius circle around you. There's to all within 30 feet of a person or object that is clearly visible and identifiable. When Rakesh was in game, I particularly enjoyed singling him out with his giant glowing shield because he was very easy to spot.
Sure, sure. Yep, that's the best way to cast explosion spells so they're not actually near you.
Exactly. There is to all before me within 30 feet, and that you're usually going to cast that with your arms outstretched to the sides, and then it kind of does a 30-foot radius half circle based on your outstretched arms. You're going to see that a lot with Turn Undead.
Yeah. Or other repel effects.
Right, exactly. And then finally, there is to all within this building or room or magic cage. We use that sometimes if we are able to see inside the tavern. There's a lot of people in there. It's a good way of announcing yourself as an NPC.
Sure.
Just as a note, the to all within this room or whatever. Can't really target unexplored areas of modules. For those of you who play any sort of video games that uses the term the fog of war, those areas are considered to be covered with the fog of war and they're unable to be targeted until you actually explore them. Mm-hmm. Some area-based effects have limited casting options. For example, Whirlwind may only be cast using option 2, so that's to all within 30 feet of me. Yeah. Sunburst can only be cast using option 1 to All Within the Sound of My Voice. And Turn Undead may only be cast using option 4. That's the one that we said to all before me within 30 feet. And as Andy said, all 5 prefixes are out-of-game statements, and so that means that the caster can still move around or be attacked while they're saying it.
Yep. Many area-based spells such as Mass Entangle, Mass Despair, and Essence or the other types of explosions are power level 0, meaning that they will naturally go underneath all passive resistance levels, which we should take a moment to talk about the over-under metaphor. Anything that's power level 0 goes under your resistance levels without affecting them. You still have your resistance levels. Most things that are power level 0, you can choose to block them by spending what are normally your passive resistance levels in an active way. But anything that's over 3 will go over your resistance levels. You'll still have your resistance levels, but there's really no way to stop it in general if it's power level 4 or higher.
Right, and just kind of to expand upon that idea, when you have these area-based spells that are supposed to affect a whole lot of people, the reason we have them usually be power level 0 or power level 4 is because it does not affect those passive resistance levels. That would make it crazy more powerful spell if it did affect, if it took out your spell resistances at the same time, if it took out everybody's spell resistances.
It would be really powerful, and it would also be really confusing if you cast an area-based spell and you hear some people say, resist, absorb, spell turn, blah, blah, blah. Like, it'd just be a mess.
Right. So, yeah, if they're cast at 0, it goes under your resistance levels and doesn't touch them. If they're cast at 4 or higher, it goes over your resistance levels and doesn't touch them.
Passive resistance levels from multiple different sources can stack and add up, and you can use them together. And those are usually from, like, the Iron Will, spell resistance, spell turning, or the various different resist skills, resist disease, resist essence, resist fear, resist gaze. So, like, if someone did, like, a gaze fear on you, power level 3, and it was, like, spirit 3, you could use, resist gaze or resist spirit, and then just a general resist magic to add up together to resist that thing. But with active resistances, which are mostly from maybe some other ways, but mostly just the skills like alertness, parry, deflect, dodge, fortitude, like, you either use an active resistance or you don't. You can't combine it with a passive. And you can't combine, like, two dodge ones to be a dodge two. It doesn't work like that. You can empower stuff by using, like, a grade 6 slot to make a dodge two, or a grade 9 slot to get a dodge 3 or whatever, but not, you can't mix active and passive resistance levels to resist something.
Right. And passive resistance levels also, They are hit by the first appropriate offensive ability. So
they're not smart.
So it's the first thing that hits you that you have enough resistance levels to have it, work. You can find all of this in our rule book too. It's all laid out there. And we do have some kind of cheesy rules videos on YouTube that do talk about this as well.
I also made a video talking about the active resistances and what blocks what, because that can be a little bit confusing.
Oh, but, yeah, you have a handy-dandy chart, too.
Yeah, video and handy-dandy chart that we can link to, so you guys can take a look at that. It's not really so much about the area-based spells, but I think area-based spells are on there, on that chart. If not, I'll add them before we air this thing. And in the future, when you're watching this, it'll be on there. It covers, like, how you use active resistances and whether you can dodge a packet or a whatever.
Great. Okay, that was our Clarify segment. If you have questions or things that you would like clarified, you can email them to us at themagistream@magistry.com. Stay tuned for our next segment, Wait, Wait, Don't Spell Me.
Welcome to Wait, Wait, Don't Spell Me, the original trivia game for the Magistream. In this game, our contestant will be asked a series of trivia questions about the Magistry LARP, and he'll have to answer them correctly. If he's unable to do so, he will get spelled. That is to say, he'll have a harmless spell cast upon him that will take effect at the beginning of the next event he attends.
The spell that our contestant is working to avoid is an Until Sunrise curse that makes it so that he is not able to read anything unless he shouts it aloud.
We'd like to welcome our very first contestant today, Tom Law. Hi, Tom.
Hello.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself and your Magistry character, Tom?
Well, I'm Tom, and I'm starting my sixth year at Magistry this year. My character is Dante Stormwind.
Dante Stormwind.
A human who's found himself stepping further and further into bad decisions the more I play him.
Yeah. Yeah, humans, yeah, bad decisions. And you're also a scholar and knowledgeable person.
Now
let's hope you do well. Yeah, let's hope you do well on this this quiz then.
You know? Let's hope.
Well, good luck, Tom. We would also like to introduce this episode's Wait, Wait plot panelists. Today's panelists include Game Master Scott Slater.
Hey, guys.
One of our perm NPCs, Dave Kopchick.
Hey, everyone.
And another perm NPC, Nick Donahue.
Hello.
I will also be playing the role of a panelist. So without further ado, let's start the questions.
All right, Tom. Question number one. The Green Hand is a quintet of local goblin thieves that have banded together to create the perfect crime syndicate responsible for a long list of petty thefts, including knocked over apple carts, old lady muggings, and anvil stealings. The current members of the Green Hand are not the original five. In fact, they are more like numbers 178 through 182. The Green Hand has botched many jobs over the years since it was founded and has lost and replaced practically all of its members with equally inept new ones. If you are a goblin, can knock down an old peasant woman, and run away while carrying at least one of her chickens, then you have a job. If not, you're on the waiting list until there is an opening. Our first question is, which of the following titles is not an honorific for a Green Hand member?
Is it number one, Pinky, who is a small, useless tag-along goblin with an inherited affinity for dresses?
Could it be number two, Thumbs, an upbeat, positive, and agreeable chap with a thumbs-up personality? I may feel a little typecast for this.
Could it be number three, Ringo? This goblin acts as treasure keeper and is often flirty in search of a mate.
Could it be number four, Snaps? This snappy dresser is the idea goblin and the go-getter.
Or is it number five, Poker? This goblin is the leader and it shows in his pushy, bossy attitude. Which of the following is not an honorific for a Green Hand member, Tom?
Wow. I want to say Snaps, because goblins don't seem to be very good decision makers to begin with.
Snaps is the correct answer.
The actual
fifth member of the Green Hand is the Bird, the agitator of the group who is both defiant and often rude.
Wow.
All right, so question number two. Magistry has seen its fair share of diseases, and the staff is often very proud of what they come up with, sadistic as they might be. We will read the description of four different diseases. One of these diseases does not actually exist on Majesta, and therefore has not been out in-game yet. Which one is it?
Is it mind rot? Description, congratulations, you have mind rot. For each hour you are infected, you will forget your highest grade of spells and skills, and will gradually lose all memories, beginning with your earliest. For 1 hour after you forget all grade one spells and or skills, you will remember nothing, as if subject to amnesia. At the end of that hour, your character's mind will die as per the spell Destroy Mind. Mind rot is not contagious. This, in most diseases, can be cured by the Remove Disease and Heal spells.
Could it be number two, Wobble Arms? The description of that is, congratulations, you have Wobble Arms. Until you're cured with a Remove Disease spell,
Anytime your weapon or arm strikes or is struck by another weapon or limb, the arm holding that weapon is stunned for 10 seconds and must be moved in a wobbling motion. If it is hit again in 10 seconds, your weapon will be disarmed and both arms must now move in a wobbling motion. This and most diseases can also be removed by the heal spell.
Is it the vapors? Congratulations, you have the vapors. Until you are cured with the remove disease spell, anytime you become scared or surprised, you will fall unconscious as per the skill waylay. This, and most diseases, can also be removed by the heal spell.
Could it be number 4, sleeping sickness? This disease causes your character to fall asleep suddenly and uncontrollably at various intervals. Much like a narcoleptic, you sleep for 30 seconds during the first 3 minutes that you are affected by sleeping sickness. During the second 3 minutes, you sleep for 1 minute. During the third 3 minutes, you sleep for 90 seconds. During the fourth 3 minutes, sleep for 2 minutes. During the fifth 3 minutes, sleep for 2.5 minutes. After 15 minutes with sleeping sickness, you will fall asleep permanently and cannot be awakened by awaken, pain, or suffering hit point damage. You can only be awakened if an appropriate effect is used that can remove sleeping sickness, and it must meet or beat the power level of the sleeping sickness that was put upon you.
All right, Tom, so those are the 4 diseases. Which is not an actual in-game disease yet?
Number 2, wobble arms?
Number 2, wobble arms is the correct answer.
Woo!
So it was a suggestion
for a disease. I've had 1 in 3 before myself.
Yeah. Wobble arms is the correct answer, though it was a suggestion for a disease in one of the staff's many documents. It has never made its way through the Shadow Mist and onto Majesta. All of the others have made an appearance and could reappear at any time, and you could get those again. All right, 2 for 2. Let's go for question number 3. The Dabbleverse is comprised of a multitude of other dimensions aside from our own Majesta. Some of them can be pretty normal, while others can be absolutely absurd. Hoppers are constantly finding and documenting new dimensions all the time. Which of the following dimensions is not a real and verified member of the Dabbleverse yet?
Could it be number 1, Drift? This place is the bee's friggin' knees. Picture a sweltering sun in the center of a sphere of water, and you have Drift. Resting atop the outside of this simmering ocean are tiny land masses, islands, that float along aimlessly. Outside of that is just a pleasant night sky. It's like a perpetual island paradise without the sun searing your skin. And oh yeah, don't go swimming too deep, or you'll boil yourself alive. Nice place.
Is it number 2, the Great Hush? No sound actually exists in this dimension. That makes spellcasting tricky. And good luck getting home from that. But sneaking around and hiding is way easier. Not to mention it helps heighten your other senses and teach you valuable lessons in nonverbal communication.
Is it number 3, Asterodelia? The dimension of Asterodelia is populated with people who spend their days engaging in battle. The people who inhabit this dimension have the ability to easily grow back limbs and other body parts that may have been lost.
Or is it number 4? Cragfots. Silly name. A well-kept secret among brewers and hoppers alike, Cragfots is known as being both a dream and a nightmare. The very air on this dimension is thick, peaty, and alcoholic to most off-dimensional folks. Though it is fun for a while to walk around and get intoxicated by the very air you breathe, it is also very easy for travelers to the dimension to get poisoned when they are there for too long. Brewers and members of the Brewers Guild have been working very hard to try and gather and distill the air for more common consumption amongst Majestans, but most have not been successful.
Well, Tom?
This one's really tough. I'm going to say 3.
Number 3, Astrodelia?
Yes.
Dimension populated by people who engage in battle?
Yes.
Well, I'm sorry, Tom, but that is not correct. That is a real dimension. Cragfots is the fake dimension.
It sounded too good.
Oh, yeah. That's
it's
where
such a good name. I love it.
The whole time I was thinking, this is where Fitzy's from.
Yeah, that would explain a lot, wouldn't it? Well, you did get 2 out of 3 right. So I believe that means you are not going to be spelled.
Correct. You will also get your name on the wall of winners that we will set up for just this occasion. So, congratulations!
Yeah, winning!
Thanks so much, Tom.
No, this was a lot of fun.
Thank you for playing. Wait, wait, don't spell me. And thanks to our panelists as well.
We'd like to take a brief moment here to thank our sponsor for today's show. Today's sponsor is the Order of the Ebon Wolf. Do monstrous fiends arrest your steps in fear? Do enemies loom large above your head? The Order of the Ebon Wolf is here to fight our clients' battles in their stead. The Ebon Wolves will force your foes to fall. With us, there is no task too great or small. Thank you, Ebon Wolves. And now, for our Command Perform segment, Andy Doucette will regale us with a story about a forlorn princess and her slopped dripper.
This is the story of Prinderella and the Cents. Once upon a rhyme, there was a gritty little pearl named Prinderella. Prinderella lived at home with her 2 sisty uglers and her knicked web-stepper. Prinderella's sisty uglers made her wean the clindos, flub the scrores, and do all the wordy-dirk. What a shirty dame. One day, the Pransom Cents sent out a clock promation throughout the Pringdom that all the gritty little pearls should come to a Drancy Fest ball. Prinderella's sisty uglers had Drancy Fesses, but all Prinderella had was a wordy drag. So she cat and ride. Hoo-boo, hoo-boo. When Solvenudden, who should appear but Prinderella's Gary Frogmother? Prinderella's Gary Frogmother turned the heist into morses, the sumpkin into a poach, and turned Prinderella's wordy drag into a Drancy Fess. She went to the Drancy Fess ball, and she dranced with the Pransom Cents all night, and they lell and thaw. But on the Moke of Stridnight, Prinderella dan round the Stalus Peps, and on the Stodden Pep she slopped her dripper. The nary next day, the Pransom Cents sent out another clock promation throughout the Pringdom, that all the gritty little pearls should sly on the slopped dripper. Well, the gritty little pearls slid it on, but it fitted it. Prinderella's sisty uglers slid on the slopped dripper. It fitted it. Even Prinderella's knicked webstepper slid on the slopped dripper. It fitted it. But when Prinderella slid on the slopped dripper, it fitted it. They got mappily harried and lived slappily after ever. The storyl of this mori is, just slop your dripper on the Stalus Peps if you want to loll and fuv with a Pransom Cents.
And who doesn't want to loll and fuv with a Pransom Cents? Thanks, Andy. That was a lot of fun to listen to. If you would like to be spotlighted on our Command Perform segment, please send us a 2 to 5 minute recording of your performance. It could be a musical performance, a song, or an instrumental piece. It could be a dramatic reading, or a poem that you've written, or that you would like to see performed. We will also be accepting visual performances, provided that there's an audio component to them, such as a description of what's going on in the background. You can send those to themagistream@magistry.com. We'd love to see you on.
Welcome to Ask Ryben Anything. Disclaimer. The opinions expressed here are for informational purposes only and not for the purpose of providing legal advice. The opinions of Ryben Van Holt are completely in character and may not reflect the opinions of Andy Doucette or Magistry staff and may be factually untrue. Prior results do not guarantee a similar outcome, especially when time travel is involved. Oh, hello there. I was just sitting by this roaring fireplace and enjoying some spiced riaca while reading the stack of letters some of you have written. There sure are a lot of them all of a sudden. Let me try to get through a few of them now. Silver writes, if this is a stick, and this is a stick, is this a stick? The answer is no. A concerned banker writes, where exactly do you hide your money? Excellent question. A secure place. Saeed Abdahi writes, what is the best way to avoid tax collectors? That's easy. Stepped down from the job right before the annual conference. Sorry, my friend. Good luck hosting that panel. Arvili writes, with all these Docamore about, is there any way to have DACA less? Actually, Arvili, it would be DACA fewer. Arvili also writes, what is the best way to deal with an ambush in the cabin when you aren't decent? Ah, an etiquette question. The best way to avoid the situation is being properly prepared. Bring proper, decent sleepwear to wear at night, and when you go to the privy, always do so in the company of others, never by yourself. This should reduce or eliminate those times when you could be caught with your pants down, so to speak. Some situations are unavoidable, but can still be prepared for. Always sleep with a weapon or spell component within easy reach. Know which of your spells can be cast at range without even the need for a spell component. These spells can be cast without leaving your bedsheets. I prefer a good feeble mind, but your skills may vary. Memorize the incants for confuse, despair, or entangle, and be able to rattle them off in quick succession. Incidentally, if, like me, you are not decent at fighting, these skills apply to a variety of situations. If you are skilled in combat and are not a caster, practice your techniques that require locking eyes with a target. Many of you are capable of giving foes who wake you unexpectedly such a look that it will send them scurrying in terror, or at least throw them off balance long enough for you to get out of bed and get decently armed and armored. Dogwood writes, where do babies come from? Well, that's all the time I have for today. Thanks for stopping by, and thank you for all your letters.
Our next segment is a knowledge segment, and we are doing Knowledge Local. In this segment, we'll discuss something that is local to most Majestans and probably plays or will play a prominent role in their lives, the Incarnations and the Allegiant. So most characters on Majesta do have some type of faith in one thing or another, and the ideas that most people choose to put their faith in are incarnations of various powerful and archetypal phenomena. When Majestans put their faith into something or worship something, it's called giving agreement. You are adding your support to a being or an idea, which gives it power and influence over the world. As a Majestan, you don't really have a limited supply of agreement, and you are able to give that agreement to different, even conflicting, incarnations, beings, or ideologies. For example, a Majestan is able to support both life and death, or law and chaos, with their agreement.
Incarnations are personifications of certain aspects of life on Majesta. There are 17 major incarnations. Music, repose, which actually is a liminal incarnation of death and dream. Evil, law, labor, memory. Chaos, life, nature, knowledge, magic, peace, community, fear, war, faith, and fortune.
I was totally going to reorganize those for you, Andy, and I did not.
No.
So they are still in the order that they came to me in trying to remember.
That's all
them.
Right. There are also many, many lesser incarnations out there, including things like devastation, luck, nightmare, vengeance, and pestilence, which have ties to one or two major incarnations.
So the really cool thing, I think, about our incarnations is the flexibility that you have in the way that you kind of revere them, if you choose to do so. For example, you don't really, you know, even necessarily have to be a maestro or even a musician to revere the intrinsically mathematical nature of music. You can be a mathematician and be like, oh, yeah, no, I worship music because have you seen how involved it is mathematically? Music also includes, like, most forms of art and literature, too. So you could be a poet or an artist and still worship the incarnation of music. You can be struck by, like, different aspects of the incarnations and express your faithfulness to that incarnation in different ways. And if you really want to get more specific in your worship, you can always look into the lesser incarnations, who are the more specialized versions of the greater incarnations. For example, luck is obviously one aspect of fortune, and pestilence has ties to nature.
Mm-hmm. Then again, there will always be folks out there who worship gods or goddesses. characters may believe in one or more gods if they choose, but these characters are quite rare on Majesta. Also, note, for the sake of respecting out-of-game religions and religious sensitivities, we won't allow characters to worship any real-world god, even those that might be from like classical mythology, like Zeus or Osiris or Odin, etc.
It's also, you know, we don't really, that's why we don't allow people to wear for real world religious symbols in game either. Mm. We just want to be very, very sensitive to the fact that that is a very personal aspect of who you are and of who people are in the real world. And we just don't want to bring that into game and accidentally, be insensitive or disrespectful. So, Andy, I hardly need to ask, but I'm going to anyway. Mm-hmm. What is your favorite incarnation?
Well, that would be knowledge.
Ooh, this is my surprise face.
Surprise, surprise. I also like law, magic. Yeah.
Mostly in the
head. I like community as well.
Now, do you as Andy like knowledge, or is that more of a Ryben thing?
Oh, well, yeah, for sure. I wouldn't have played Ryben if that wasn't a part of me that I wanted to explore. But Ryben, definitely more so in terms of, you know, the knowledge obsession. Although I do like, you know, knowing how stuff works, which also sort of plays into law as well. Memory I like a lot as well. Ryben less so, because he's seen how malleable memory can be in Majesta. I mean, yeah, Ryben and Andy pretty much agree on those couple of things. Andy would probably rank knowledge maybe a little bit less, and Ryben would probably rank memory a little bit more. Andy also does value, like, community as well.
I think that's really important, both in and out of game.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those incarnations that you don't really think a lot about. You're like, oh, community, right. All right, whatever. But when you actually do put some thought into it, like, community is like the core of who we are as
humans. Yeah, I think no one really,
humans.
Even long-term players never really thought about community as an incarnation until, like, Sandow comes out as community, and then, like, all of a sudden, like, everyone's like, asking, like, Ryben as the cordon in the Allegiant, like, hey, like, what's this about community? Community seems pretty cool. So I think a lot of credit for that goes to Sandow and also to the staff for bringing that in.
Yeah, we thought Sandow would be great for an incarnation of community. So I have a question about knowledge, really quick. Do you think applied knowledge...
There's no questions allowed about knowledge. I'm sorry,
Do you think that knowledge for knowledge's sake is as important as applied knowledge?
I enjoy, as a hobby, knowledge for knowledge's sake, even if I'm not applying it, which is, like, I like trivia. Ryben too, although, I don't know, Ryben kind of probably... more so just knowledge for knowledge's sake. There's a possibility he could go down a wrong path with that, but I don't know. We'll see.
Ryben's a knowledge hoarder.
Yeah. Ryben is also very, very community minded too. Like, but yeah.
Oh yeah.
No, I think there's a danger inherent in going overboard with all of these things. Law as well has a lot of dangers in going overboard with that and not thinking about how it actually benefits people.
I think there's
a good reason that evil is in the head. If you're just thinking about things, like, logically, there is a danger of forgetting, like, people's feelings and stuff.
Absolutely. You can ask me about my favorite incarnations?
Oh, yeah, what are you... Oh, sorry. What are your favorite incarnations, Angela?
My favorite incarnations happen to be... Death and Dream, with a side of memory. I've been listening to a lot of other podcasts about the connection between death and dream. And it always just kind of blows my mind when I come back to the mythologies of Majesta and how death and dream are the same, you know, essentially the same incarnation of repose, and how their realms parallel each other and in some places crisscross each other. And I just think it is so fascinating. I think dream, like, on an out-of-game sense, is just the most fascinating, like, aspect of, you know, I mean, I guess it's not the most, but it, like, the mind is so crazy interesting, and dreams are, you know, just so, so fascinating to me. And they're parallel to death, and, you know, sleep as being a representation of death to come, you know, it's, I don't know, it just fascinates me. So I'm really, really, like, into the whole repose and death and dream kind of dichotomy that goes on there. And memory too plays into that too, because you know, it is so, like, it is so malleable, like you said, and it is so, you know, subjective in a lot of ways.
Yeah, that's true. I do like that. Ryben doesn't necessarily like dichotomy and stuff. Ryben actually, an incarnation that Andy likes that Ryben doesn't is music.
Oh yeah.
Ryben sort of views music as a usurper, not part of the original plan incarnation.
Of course he does.
If you know some of the history of that. So it's like, this is not right. The music shouldn't be an incarnation. It should have been time.
That's true. Fair enough. All right, so in listening to all this, you might be asking, well, hey, there's an incarnation of evil. Why isn't there an incarnation of good? The best answer we can give for that is that good is just too broad of an idea to encompass a station of incarnationhood. And it just envelops so many other aspects of various other incarnations. Like, anything that could be described as good, like you're saying, this falls under good's purview, could really easily describe another incarnation with more specificity and could fall under that incarnation's purview. In addition, good, you know, the idea of good is only good in relation to certain topics, and what goodness is a highly debatable subject. For example, like, there are things that could be considered good and yet fall under the purview of evil, which is, you know, one of our favorite things to do as staff is to give people those moral conundrums, like, this maybe isn't good, but it's good when applied in this way, you know. But that's why we don't name an incarnation of good at game.
So, okay, so we've talked a lot about the incarnations. Where does the Allegiant come in? The Allegiant is an organization that provides an organized way to worship and offer agreement to the incarnations. It spans the entire world of Majesta. Their goal is to spread the worship of the incarnations and to honor them. The Allegiant actually divides the incarnations into 18 incarnations, splitting repose into death and dream, and divides it into three groups of six: the heart, the head, and the hand. They're not necessarily divided by how they get along with each other. For example, peace and war are both in the hand. Death and life are both in the heart. But they don't necessarily have to be like that way either, because chaos falls under the heart, law is in the head, and dream is in the head, and death is in the heart. So that liminal is even split between those three divisions. They're divided by how they influence a person and how a person acts in regard to the incarnation and the incarnation in regard to them. Blue is the color of the heart. The heart is living. The heart is emotion. The heart is passion. The heart sways rationality and gives drive to action. The heart is fear, death, faith, music, life, and chaos.
Red is the color of the sect, the head. The head is consciousness, it's reason, it's methodical. The head is drive and gives order to action and tempers emotion. The incarnations of the head are evil, dream, magic, knowledge, memory, and law.
Yellow is the color of the hand. The hand is action. It's work, though not necessarily manual labor. The hand is follow-through. The hand is consequence. The hand gives a means to both passion and ambition. The hand is nature, peace, war, labor, community, and fortune.
So in talking about the different colors of these three sects, they're all kind of combined into the symbol of the Allegiant. So the symbol of the Allegiant is a representation of the blood waters and of the orb of creation. In the center, so it's a circle, and in the center of the circle is a white circle representing the orb. Surrounding that is a trisected circular border featuring the colors of the different sects, the red, yellow, and blue, which represent the colors of the blood waters. And the entire symbol is surrounded by a border of blackness representing the nothingness that existed before the incarnations were validated in the blood waters through the authority of the orb of creation. It has so much symbolism.
Yeah, it's a powerful symbol.
It is.
Joining the Allegiant is actually pretty easy. You talk to your local ranked Allegiant official, you pay a couple of copper in dues, and choose an incarnation, or two, or three, or six, or 18, that you would like to dedicate yourself to, and you're in. This makes you an initiate, and grants you someone to take your problems to, and they don't necessarily pertain to the law. It gives you spiritual and emotional guidance. A farmer can take her sick son to a worshiper of life, and for the tiny cost of guild dues, that's often an incentive enough for the average person to join.
The next rank is that of acolyte. To reach this step, you have to declare your allegiance to either a single incarnation, or a couple, or a whole section of incarnations, or all of them. In order to declare that dedication, you must go before a confessor, cordant, yeoman, or minister, or, you know, maybe higher, and explain to them why you could worship any of the incarnations within your section, but you choose to worship the ones you did. This is done because the Allegiant is created first and foremost to honor the incarnations, but also to foster cooperation and understanding amongst their faithful.
So the next rank above that comes the Confessor, who's associated with the heart, the Cordant with the head, and the Yeoman with the hand. Each of these ranked individuals are in charge of their individual sect on a local level. Generally, one of each per town, if possible, but a sufficiently large city might have multiple confessors or cordons, for example. Conversely, a handful of very small hamlets might fall under the purview of a single yeoman. Their job is to see the needs of the members and report to the minister.
Right, and like, for example, like some of the very small hamlets around the time, the town of Elmerton used to go and report to Minister Oliver, because that was the most local Allegiant ranking member that they had available to them. Mm-hmm. So speaking of Minister Oliver, the minister oversees the confessor, cordant, and yeoman in a town. It's his job to adjudicate disputes between these individuals. Of course, the Allegiant prefer that this individual, that the minister, is an incarnist, but they understand that it isn't always possible. And, like I said, your local minister is Minister Oliver Finisterra. And then after that, briefly, in order of ranking from lowest after minister to the highest, we have your local fervent, who leads the heart, is Umi Vashgarden, who is an agent of life. Your ardent, who leads the head, is Malcolm Foblad, who is an agent of dream. And the Deviter, who leads the hand, is Deviter Garant Worson, who is an agent of war.
Really? then there's executor. The executor, our executor, is Executor Pori the Advocate, who is an agent of law. There's the Arch-Fervent. Again, the fervent is related to the heart. Kay, Storm Mistress of Irvinshire, the Shifting Lord. She is an agent of chaos.
Oh, that's my favorite name.
There is the Arch Ardent, which is the head again. Garain Bromsvern, agent of law. There's Arch Deviter for the hand. Nexus Thatcher, incarnist of the hand, the hero of Loex. And the Arch Minister, Valvic Gallows.
Who I hear has a hearing problem.
I'm sorry, what?
I said who I am to understand has a hearing problem.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
You still can't hear me?
No, it's a joke.
You got me. That was good. Anyway, you can continue.
All right. Anyway, you can rise in the ranks by contributing to the organization in ways dictated by your local minister, or if you're in a larger town or city, you might report to the fervent, the debiter, or the ardent.
So, as a general rule, the common person doesn't often devote themselves to just one incarnation. You know, eventually a magistrate might decide to follow community. You know, maybe it's a good thing to put on your voting signs, your polling signs. A general would probably dedicate himself, or, you know, maybe was brought up to worship war. And maybe a librarian, you know, worships knowledge. But
maybe.
Just maybe. But in general, most common folk pay tribute to all of the incarnations equally. And people who do that are called incarnists. And an incarnist could worship, like, the six incarnations that fall under the purview of the heart. Or, you know, he or she could worship all 18.
Yep. I believe Minister Oliver follows the head in general. He's an incarnist of the head.
I believe that's true.
Anyway, as you can see, there are many different ways of acting with the Allegiant and worshiping the incarnations. It's worth noting that you can also, and many people do, worship incarnations outside of the Allegiant. The Allegiant's just the organization that was created to do so in an organized formal structure. If you have other questions, you can certainly direct them to us, or you can ask your local Allegiant officials, that also includes me, Minister Oliver, or Yeoman Sebastian, Dark in-game.
Well, that's another show in the bag. Thanks to Tom Law and our staff panelists, Scott Slater, Dave Kopchick, and Nick Donahue for playing and being a part of Wait, Wait, Don't Spell Me. Thank you to Silver, Saeed, and Arvili for submitting questions for Ryben to answer. Thanks to the Order of the Ebon Wolf for submitting our sponsor break. And thank you, Andy, for your submission to our Command Perform segment.
You're welcome. Thanks again to Sam Rushford for writing our theme music. You can find more of her music at facebook.com/SamRushfordMusic. And thank you for listening. Next time on the Mage's Dream, we travel to Battlekeep, one of Urbanshire's major cities. We'll get some cooking tips from Wilhelm, listen to a performance by Bolam, witness me getting a little tipsy in my segment, and talk about one of the skills of Magistry. See you then. Bye.
Bye.
Introducing the Magistry. Come ask Ryben anything. Be your bridge between the games. People don't understand it. Say I'm too old to believe in magic. The only limit is what you can imagine. So come and listen, la 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 la. So come and listen, la 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 la.
This podcast has been a production of Magistry, copyright P. Dabble Games. You can find out more about our LARP at magistry.com or on our Facebook page at facebook.com/magistry. If you have any comments, suggestions, feedback, or questions, you can email us at themagistream@magistry.com.